People are just lucky. I don't know if you feel that way or not, but some people are just lucky. And we use that expression a lot, do we not? That's what we want to talk about this day. And you may not be one of those who's lucky. I want you to know that normally the most slides I've had in a sermon is about 60 or 65. Some do not have nearly that many different slides. You're not so lucky today. I got 88 slides. Now, if you think you're in trouble, you got to think about Bob back here that's got to keep up. Bob's got to listen and change quickly because we're going to fly through this sermon. But we want to end this sermon by helping us understand we're better than lucky. It's not that some people are lucky. We're on another page from that, and that's what it's all about. But to introduce the lesson, look back at that text that was read in from Psalms 34, and look at the words that are used there to talk about God on this earth. And look at all the words that are there. There's the eyes of the Lord. There's His ears. There's His face. There's the fact, verse 17, that the Lord hears. Verse 18, the Lord is near. Verse 19, the Lord delivers. Verse 20, the Lord guards. And verse 22, the Lord redeems. Now, a whole lot of other verses you could put about God's presence in this world. Well, look at those. God is in this world. And you and I need to have an appreciation that these words, as we look at the text, were words that were written by David. And David was a man who was filled with many, many trials. And so he writes these words. And you stop and think about the adversity that was in his life. You know, King Saul trying to kill him and his own sons leading rebellion to try to kill him and having the death of his children. And yet in the midst of all of this, David says, the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous and his ears are open to their prayers. That's what, the way it's quoted in 1 Peter chapter 3 when this psalm is quoted. But there's another verse that sums this up, and I almost used this for the introductory text, and that is Psalms chapter 37, verse 25. So those of you who are older may need to memorize this verse. I was young, but now I'm old. Now, by the way, David died at 70, so you can fit your in wherever you are in relationship to that. But David said, I was young, but now I'm old, and he looks back and he says, let me tell you something. I have never seen the righteous forsaken. God's in this world. We're not talking about luck. We're talking about God being in this world. And we have something that's far, far better than being lucky. And David said, you know, I've never seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. And to that, we just add the comment, not even one time. That's what the word never means. David, look back in all of your life. David, tell me one time in your life in which God was not a part of your life, or the part of the righteous folks that were around. Never, ever have I seen that. And so you and I need to understand that the emphasis of today's lessons, you are not just lucky. That's not right. Now that expression, she sure was lucky, is a part of our vocabulary. Somebody makes a better grade on test than you did, and then, you made the F and the teacher loses all the papers, and so you don't have, well, you sure were lucky today. You understand what I'm talking about? It's not a matter of luck. Now, there may be chances and circumstances that happen in life that are random in the very nature, but you and I need to understand that we do not live trying to work it all out, hoping we have a lucky day. That's not what it is all about. Now, to illustrate that, I want to tell you a Bible story. It's a long Bible story, and that's why we've got 88 slides, and it's one we ought to study more. Troy, I want to see if you remember this story. Will you do that? How old are you, Troy? You're about eight, seven or eight? Eight, all right. Troy, end of the sermon, I'm gonna not publicly, after services, I'm going to say, tell me this Bible story. And I might pick randomly not the teens. Some of you who are sitting back in the third row from the back, I might randomly just pick you as you walk out and say, tell me this story. I want to talk to you about the book of Esther. There's a background to this book, and the setting of that, the historical time of it, is the Jews were returning from Babylon. Babylon has fallen. They've been 70 years in Babylon, and now the Jews are returning to Babylon because Persia has taken over the world, the Medes and the Persians. You may remember when the handwriting was on the wall, and that very night the Babylonian king was killed, and the Persians now rule the world. But the first thing the king does, he sends that decree back that says every Jew that wants to can go back to the promised land. But we need to understand about the Persian rule, and we'll talk about this several times in this lesson. The Persian had this rule. It's almost the rule of iron that the Romans used, but here's the Persian rule. Once the decree has been given, and once the king has used his signet ring to sign that law never, ever, ever can be changed in the history of mankind. You got to get that in your head. You want to understand the rest of the story. If you don't understand that the kind of rule that they had was that their laws were immutable, their laws were unchangeable. Now, let me tell you something that's amazing. How many books in the Bible? You know? That's right, 66 books in the Bible. How many of those books do you think the name of God is found in? 65 of the 66 books. You know there's one book in the Bible that does not have God in it. You read the entire book and never once do you read the name God. It's the book of Esther. But I want to tell you this, that God is on every page of the book of Esther. So to tell the story about Esther, let me do it by pointing out the fact that there are some major characters in the book. Let's start with the king, King Ahasuerus. Now, people have difficulty trying to identify just exactly when Ahasuerus lived, and you read the commentaries, and there's a King Ahasuerus that's in the book of Nehemiah, and there's this Ahasuerus up there, and some people struggle to say, is that like the pharaohs in Egypt? You know, all the Egyptians kings were called pharaohs, and in Rome, many of the rulers were called Caesars. And so is Ahasuerus, this is the same one. It's rather immaterial because we're in this same, similar type period. And so he's the ruler of the world. And we put again, he has unbreakable laws ruling over the world. And so this king hosted a great, great feast. In fact, this feast lasted for 6 months, 180 days. And as the time of the end of, how'd you like to feast for 180 days? You might not be a big preacher when you get there, but by the time you leave, it'll be one of the biggest preachers in the brotherhood, would you not? I mean, you stop and think about it. And as the feast is coming to an end, they're drinking. And every person at that feast, because all of the noblemen, all of the great people from around the world have assembled to be at the time when Ahasuerus is ruling over the world. He's been ruler for about 3 years, and there's a great celebration. And he gives every one of them a different cup, and they have this royal wine. And he tells all the noblemen, you need to drink or not drink. Just do whatever makes you happy. Sound like some of the philosophy in our world, right? Feels good. Go ahead and do it. Just go ahead. You may never have this chance. And so he says, do whatever you want to do. And so in this drunken feast, he demands that his beautiful wife, Vashti, he demands that Vashti come and show her beauty before all of these drunken men. Second major character, Vashti. She's beautiful. We've already talked about that. Now, at the same time, this feast is going on, and the Bible does not indicate how long her feast had been going on, but she herself was giving a great feast, and there were a lot of the noble women that were there. But whenever the king says to Vashti, come before these drunken men. What's that all about? Well, I knew a man in New Zealand many years ago. He's a much younger preacher than I am right now. Josh, even younger than you are. There was a man we were trying to teach the gospel to, or to his wife and everything. And she volunteered to us that her husband said, why don't you get drunk so that you can have sex with other men? Drinking messes your mind up, doesn't it? She didn't do it. And Queen Vashti says, I am not going to do that. I'm not going to parade my body so men can lust after it. The theme for this month, I'm not ashamed to be holy. Here's an illustration of the very kinds of things that we have. And I'd caution some of you ladies to be very much aware of this. That here is a woman who saw that the parading of the beauty of her body before others was not a thing that was a matter of nobility. And she had no desire for men to lust after her. And sometimes in the way that we dress in this day and age, we need to understand about lasciviousness. Lasciviousness is that which produces evil thoughts, any actions or words or deeds or walk or stories. It's that which produces evil thoughts in the minds of others. And so Vashti said, I may be beautiful, but I am not coming in. Muslim world, what's going to happen to Muslim world? It's not, the Muslims are not there. It's the Arab world, though. You know about that Muslim walking three steps behind her husband, and she cannot drive a car and cannot go out on her own. That's the kind of world we're in, not the Muslim world, but the Arab world. And whenever she refuses to go, you're talking about a stir that comes up. The king gets so angry. He banishes her. Don't you ever come into my presence again. And they've got a major problem. And the major problem is this. The major problem now is that all of the women, because they're there at the women's feast. They're there at the women's feast. And if Vashti disobeys her husband and she's queen, it's freedom for all women on this earth. And so the evilness of King Ahasuerus, because he was not himself a particularly godly man. And so he sends out an unchangeable decree that every woman must honor her husband almost regardless of what he says. That might have worked back in that day. I'm not sure how it would work in our present day. But you see, that's the whole dilemma. Here is this law. Now then, he doesn't have a queen. And so now we're introduced to the third major character, and that's Haggai. Haggai was the custodian of the king's women. If we said the word harem, that might give us a whole lot better understanding of what's going on. He's in charge of all the women. And so he and some other noblemen are involved in finding every beautiful woman there is in the Persian kingdom. Every beautiful woman there is in that Persian kingdom. And we it may have been shown on the slide. It may come up later. But his kingdom, get this, look at a world map. India to Ethiopia. A lot of pretty women. And so all of the most beautiful women are brought and brought. And so there was 1 year for all of these virgins, the most beautiful people on the beautiful virgins on this earth are brought for the king. He's going to get a new queen. And they're given a year to prepare themselves. They're 6 months. They're involved in beauty. Well, the whole time is to get ready to be beautiful for the king, learning how to oil the body and how to make up the body and everything. And so then, after that year's time, each is brought to the king one at a time. Each is brought to the king, and the last one that was brought was Esther. Character number 4, Esther. Esther's parents had died. Her mom and her dad were dead, and she'd been raised by her cousin Mordecai. Raised by her cousin Mordecai, and she was very, very beautiful. We'll talk a lot about Mordecai in this lesson, but I want you to understand, he was the kind of individual that saw a need for his cousin and adopted her to raise her. Now, he advised her, because she's going to be brought before the king, don't tell anybody that you're a Jew. Ever understand about the feelings in our world, the anti-Semitic feeling that's in our world? In that Arab world, the Jews were hated. And so Mordecai says, when all of this process has taken place, whenever you go, don't tell anybody that you're a Jew. Remember that. It's important in this story. So she was to remember. When it came her time, she became the favorite of Haggai. For some reason, there was something about Esther. And so he gives her the most noble attendants to take care of her and to prepare her for the king. Even gives her the most choice room to live in the place where all the virgins are kept. And I am not sure if there were 77 virgins awaiting the king. I just threw that in. I had a random thought. Maybe I'll take it back and just get back on the sermon. But here are all the virgins that are there. And Esther reaches the favor. But instead of taking before the king whatever she thought the king might like, she says to Haggai, "Give me wisdom. Tell me what I need to do to find favor with the king." And whatever she did when she was brought before the king pleased the king. And he said, "Esther, you're going to be the new queen." She sure was lucky, wasn't she? She sure was lucky that when she's this orphan, she sure was lucky she had this cousin. She sure was lucky that she was pretty. She sure was lucky that she was chosen. There are so many that could have been. She sure was lucky, wasn't she? And she sure was lucky that she had the right perfume and everything when she went in the presence of the king. Is it more than luck? Is it more than luck that Mordecai said, "Hide the fact that you are a Jew"? And so the king proclaimed what the Bible describes as the Feast of Esther. I've read this story so many times. Never saw the king had a feast for Esther. And all of the nobility came. And in fact, all of the virgins are reassembled again so they could all recognize who the new queen was going to be. And so the king decrees that she'll be the new queen, gives her the crown. There's a problem. Somebody wants to kill this king Ahasuerus. While this feast is going on, Mordecai, who is a Jew, but he doesn't go into the palace, has no right to be in the palace. Mordecai is outside the gates, outside the walls, wherever the king and the new queen were to be found, he's out in the courtyard. And so we introduced Bigthan and Teresh. Is that character number 4 or is it character number 5? Lost count. Bigthan and Teresh. They are the doorkeepers. Secret service. They're the ones who keep the door of the king. You cannot get to see the king if you don't get by these guys. I don't know if this first 3 letters in Bigthan's name has anything to do with why he was chosen, but he was a man of nobility and a trusted individual, and these 2 men lay a plot to kill the king. "We're going to kill the king." Well, guess what? They're the doorkeepers of the gate. Guess who's at the gate? At the gate, there is Mordecai. And Mordecai overhears what's going on and discovers the plot to kill King Ahasuerus. Got to remember this. It comes up later in the story. Discovers the plot to kill King Ahasuerus and tells Esther. And Esther tells the king. And guess what happens? They hang these 2 men on gallows. Noose put around their neck. Out in public, they hang to tell people, "You don't mistreat the king." Character number next. Is this 6? Mordecai himself. All of a sudden, Mordecai, who's been in this story throughout, now becomes something that we need to understand. What a great parent he was. Sometimes we take our parents for granted. I paused long enough to mention the fact that my 2 sisters are adopted. Sometimes I stop and think of how blessed they were. Barbara was about 6 when she was adopted. Dot was about 1 or 2. Probably about 2. And Barbara only is the only one who remembers the death of her mom and her dad. But as her parents were dying, they came to my mom and my dad and said, "We're dying. Would you do us a favor? Would you adopt our children?" I've grown up in a house where I have 2 sisters who understand what it's like to be an orphan and to be adopted. And that's what Mordecai did. Are you adopted? Let me tell you something, make you feel good. Your parents chose you. They had to take what they got on your brothers and sisters that are not adopted. My mom and dad adopted Dot and Barbara. And that's what Mordecai did. And he placed within her some unbelievable values. He became the great advisor to Esther, and she could be to what Psalms 1 talks about. Blessed are those who do not walk in the counsel of the ungodly. Blessed are those who walk in the counsel of the godly. And in Esther's life, as she was growing up, she understood some things because she learned it from her parents. We put on the screen also that Mordecai has a great understanding of God and of God's providence. Character number 6, number 7, Haman. See, there were 7 noblemen that were above the 127, you know, from India all the way to Ethiopia, divided up into 127 different provinces, areas, almost nations. There were 7 individuals who were above the 127, and Ahasuerus was promoted to be the highest man in the kingdom next to himself. Sometimes you appoint an individual, and it's not good to give a man who is not really pure and holy great power, and we're about to see this in relationship to this. So the king, obviously, in that very culture, indicated that everybody ought to bow down to Haman. He's the king's right. He's number 2 in the entire kingdom. Over 127 provinces, there's kings Ahasuerus, and right below him is Haman. And so when he goes out, everybody bows down before Haman, except one man, Mordecai. Cousin Mordecai. Now, where's he? He's at the gates. He's at the gate. So every time Haman goes in to see the king, every time Haman leaves the king, he has to come by the palace or has to come by the courtyard, and everybody's bowing down before that king, except Mordecai. He knows that evidence of obeisance belongs only toward the God of heaven. And Haman finds out that Mordecai is a Jew, and he develops rage within his heart against the Jews. He's a rich man. And so Haman says, I'm going to kill all the Jews, and in doing all that, I'll get rid of Mordecai. And so he's filled with rage, and there's so much anger in the book of Esther. And so he says, he goes before the king, and he says, we have some people in this nation that are nothing but troublemakers. They don't live after our lifestyles. They're not a part of us. Is this racial prejudice? Guess you could call it that. I will give you 10,000 pieces of silver if you'll let me deal with them. The king takes off his signet ring, hands it to Haman, and says, write any decree that you like, and seal that with my signet ring. And so, in the languages of all the 127 different provinces, this decree goes out that on a particular day, all of the Jews are to be killed. Now, they pick the day, and the day they picked is 1 year away to get everything ready. And they picked that day by casting lots. Pur, P-U-R. That word is mentioned in the New Testament, where Jesus kept the feast of Purim. The King James says, Feast of Lights. And so when they were casting their lots, however you cast the lots, on the 12th month, on the 13th day of the month, here's what can happen. Everybody on this earth can freely kill every Jew there is and take over every possessions that they have. It's a day in which every Jew can be killed. Unalterable. The ruler of the world, from India to Ethiopia, has with his signet ring said every Jew, 12th month, 13th day of that month, let's kill every Jew there is on this earth. Well, that day was chosen. How did the Jews respond to that? The Jewish response to the decree was obviously great weeping and fasting and wailing. In fact, Mordecai himself, he's the queen's cousin. He clothes himself in sackcloth and walks through the middle of the city, wailing and wailing about what's about to happen. He arrives at the gate. And evidently Esther's not aware of everything that's happened in the background when Haman has done all of that. She's not aware of it. She sends somebody out to Mordecai and say, "What's going on?" And then she says, "Here, I'll send you some clothes so that you can dress appropriately. Then you'll be allowed to come in the palace." And Mordecai sends the word right back, "No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to take off my sackcloth." Evidence of weeping. But he does send the message. And he sends a copy of that decree to Esther. And while we have said that that Mordecai said this to Esther, actually he said it through a messenger. Interesting sidelight. It doesn't change the story at all. But he didn't go into the presence of Esther. But he wants Esther to go and plead on behalf. Go do something. You're the queen. And she says, "Listen, I have not been in the king's presence for the last 30 days. And anybody who walks into the presence of the king without being invited will be put to death unless he holds out the scepter and invites them to come in." Mordecai gives him an amazing advice. You might want to underline in the book of Esther, to try to find the book of Esther if you're having trouble finding it. Go to Psalms, then back up to Job, and then back up to a little small book called the book of Esther. Listen to this. Here's a message. Mordecai says to Esther these words, "Do not think within your heart." That's Esther chapter 4, verse 13. "Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. I'm going to die, you're going to die, and all of your other, all the rest of the relatives that you might have." And then he says this. Listen to this. I want you to hear it. I want you to think about you. I want you to think about you when he says, "Esther, how do you know that you have not come to the kingdom, that you have not come to this place at this very time to solve this very problem?" I say to you, how do you know that where you live and the people you meet at work, how do you know that the person that you will meet this day, perhaps if you go out to eat, the very person that you meet this day, how do you know that perhaps God has put you in that workplace, in that eating place, in that friendship place, wherever you are, how do you know that God has not put you in that very place for this very purpose, because they're trying to find God? Their life's all messed up and they have no way of fixing it. How do you know, child of God at Palm Beach Lakes, that you are not where you are right now for this very purpose? Esther, it may not be a matter of luck that you sit beside the man who rules the world. And so there's that plan, and how much this plan is laid out in the beginning and how it all falls out. The Bible doesn't say. Here's the plan, though. Esther, risk your life. Go talk to the king. She's queen of the world. From India to Ethiopia. And the king is in the palace room, and she comes to the court, to the entrance. And the king, when he sees her, can do one of two things. Kill her. Just like we did Vashti, banish her. Because, see, she's about to do almost the very same thing that Vashti did. And that is to violate the protocol of the lordship of the king. And so when the king sees her, he holds out his scepter. And he says, "What do you want? I'll give you up to half of the kingdom. What do you want?" And so she says, "Here's what I want. I want you and Haman. I want you to come to a banquet that feast I'm going to give tomorrow." Haman goes home, and it is amazing how filled with pride Haman is. Greatest day he's ever had in his life. I've been invited to meet the king and the queen of the world at a private dinner. And as he walks out of the palace, guess who's there? And guess what Mordecai does not do? You ever having a good day and something really goes wrong? Haman gets home. And when Haman gets home, he is filled with despondency. He invites his friends in. "It's great. I've been honored. I'm going to have a private dinner with the king and the queen." And his wife says, "Let's take care of this Mordecai. When you go to see the king tomorrow, get there early. And when you get there early, tell the king that you need to get rid of this man." And so, in fact, she says this: "Build a gallows. How high would you build the gallows? You're going to hang somebody. 75 feet in the air. I think that's about 30. 75 feet in the air. Hang them high. We're going to show everybody about these Jews and about Mordecai. Hang them high." And so she suggested, "Now then, you ever have one of those nights when you couldn't sleep?" The king does. The king has one of those nights when he cannot sleep. And so he says, "Bring the history book." Now you see, it was the third year whenever we first, when Vashti refuses to come. That's when that feast is. It's the fifth year whenever Esther has been made to be the king, or made to be the queen. And now it's several years later. I'm not mistaken, is it the 12th year that the Bible indicates that? It must be the 12th year. And so everything's going great, but he can't sleep. I think I'll read the Chronicles of the King, not the book, but the Chronicles of the Persian king. And so he reads about all of these things, and when he reads about all of these things, he reads about that attempt to assassinate him and Bigthan and Teresh. And he says, "What was done to honor Mordecai who revealed this plan?" And nothing was done. So the king now calls Haman in. Haman, you got to get this, Haman's come in. Haman has come in to tell Mordecai, or to kill Mordecai. "I'm here early. I know the feast is not yet, but I'm here early. I got a request. Got to get rid of this guy that's a troublemaker. You know, let me kill him. It's going to be an automatic thing because he's second in the rule of the country." And so he's outside in the courtyard, and so the king says, "Haman, come on in here." And Haman walks in, and he says to Haman, "What would you suggest I do to honor a man to whom the king wants to honor above all the rest. And Haman's got it all figured out. This whole thing has to do with me. People that are self-centered, that's the way they are. It's all about me. He said, this is what I'd do. I'd get the most noble man you could get. I'd put him on the king's horse. I'd put the royal robes on him. I would have that man of nobility to march through the city. And sitting on the king's horse will be this man of nobility. And you've got some other great individual going in front of me, Haman, and saying, everybody, this is how the king honors great people. And the king says, Haman, go do that to Mordecai. Love this twist in the story, don't you? You go do it for Mordecai. And Haman, if he was crushed and depressed before, you're talking about having a bad day. He has to do what the king tells him to do. And he goes home. It's not quite time for the feast. But then the time comes for the feast. And the rest of the story. Don't have time for it. I'm going to come back, encourage you to come back tonight. Service is tonight. Can you come back tonight and hear the rest of the story? If I can give you just a prologue, attempted rape. That gets your attention? And how this decree that could never, ever be changed. But you see, because God made eternal promises about the Jews, He made these eternal promises to the Jews. I'm going to send the Messiah. It's going to end right here in the book of Esther. Because that decree cannot be changed. And so tonight, we're going to talk about when the Persian immutable law, unchangeable, comes up against the eternal promise of God, and both laws are satisfied. I hope you'll be here tonight. Lucky? Or God? She sure was lucky. She was pretty as a baby. She sure was lucky. She had Mordecai in her life. Whenever her mom and dad died, she didn't have to just become a street urchin. Lucky whenever Mordecai took time to raise a child that's not even his own. And lucky that he gave her the values that he gave to her. And lucky that he taught her about the heritage she had as being among God's chosen people. And lucky that there was enough wisdom in Mordecai to tell her, now whenever you get into the palace, let's not create a situation unnecessarily. And lucky because when she got in the palace, Haggai, she found favor in Haggai, the man who's in charge of all the virgins. Lucky that he gave her the choicest place to live in during that entire year. Lucky that she was so beautiful. Lucky that she understood what the king would please the king so that she might be chosen. And lucky that she was chosen queen. And lucky that even in the midst of that, she had Mordecai still watching over her. And lucky that Mordecai gave her the best advice that she'd ever had in her life whenever he says, how do you know that you're not in the kingdom for such a time as this? Bob, I don't know if you can go back to slide 2 to that text. Can you throw the text up there one more time? Brother and sister in Christ,
We are so blessed. And it's not a matter of luck. The eyes of the Lord, the ears of the Lord, the face of the Lord. The Lord is near. The Lord delivers. He guards. He redeems. You don't need good luck in your life. I will never leave you nor forsake you. And how we need to think about what Mordecai said to Esther. How do you know? But what you're a part of the family that you're a part of. How do you know that God has not put you in these very circumstances for this very purpose? How do you know that the adversity that was, as far as Esther was concerned, the threatening of her own life and the death of her own nation? How do you know but that the adversity that's in your life right now has not put you at a place for such a time as this? Now tonight, we're going to answer the question, can you know that? Is it possible for me to know where God has put me at a particular place for this very purpose? That's tonight's sermon. But we need to understand providence. The word providence, the English word, is made up of a prefix and the root word. Pro meaning beforehand. Prototype, pro before. And the vidence is the video. You know what providence literally means? To see beforehand. And before there was ever any Jew worried about the fact that on the 13th day of the 12th month, this nation's going to be destroyed. God had seen it beforehand, and God had been working the entirety of the life of Esther. At least that's what Mordecai indicated when he says, "Who knows, Esther? But what the very place you are right now is where God needs you to be." I hope you'll be here tonight. God can use you. And you and I need to understand there is God's written will for us. We may sometimes struggle about, is this the will of God that I do this or I do that? We may struggle about understanding, am I specifically in this place for this purpose for this time? But there's no question at all what God's will is for you today. To believe in Jesus. To change your life. Quit playing church. Let's get serious. Change. And when you've confessed your faith in Jesus, you can be immersed in water and have every sin you've ever committed washed away by the blood of Jesus. His will is to save you. And if you're lost, that's not because He has not made provision. And who knows? And I think about this almost every sermon I preach. Who knows, but perhaps this very sermon is a part of the way God's answering your prayers about straightening up your life. Get serious. Folks, let's quit playing church and say, God, use me. And then as a part of His kingdom, as a part of His body, as His beautiful bride, serve Him. And a crown awaits us. Not the crown of gold given by a king to Vashti, but a crown of righteousness and a crown of life given by the King of Kings when He crowns our life with His eternal reward. How can this church help you go to heaven? Won't you let it be known by coming right now as together we stand and sing? Will you come?